Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, the podcast where we cover all the pop culture we love to hate, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. I'm looking at you, Jax Taylor. I'm your host, Ryan Bailey.
Play your part, Jones. My bitch a choosy lover, never fuck without a rubber. Never in the sheets like it on top of the cover. Money on the dresser, drive a compressor. Top notch hoes get the most, not the lesser. Trash like the fuck with $40 in the club. Fucking up the game, bitch, it gets no love. She be cross country, giving all that she got. A thousand a popper, pulling Bentleys off the lot. Smashed up the gray one, bought me a red. Every time we hit the parking lot, we turn head. Some hoes wanna choose, but them bitches too scary. Your bitch chose me, you ain't a pimp, you a fairy.
Are you guys awake? Hi, that was pretty intense, right? Hey, it's So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. I am Ryan Bailey. What is going on, you guys? We are at Thursday. Remember, you do not have to listen to every one of these. I can't believe I'm saying this. I want you to listen to everyone, but I know there is a lot of stuff coming at you. But there, I'm telling you, these are all quality. These are all quality interviews. So you're going to want to listen to them at some point. Somebody emailed or somebody messaged me today saying that they forgot to set their timer and fell asleep to me and forgot to like turn it. So like she had went through like five of my episodes overnight. And I was like, that must have been the best sleep she's ever had. Like, just like, I just imagine just people sleeping to me all the time. So congratulations to that person. You know, I want to be the most prolific podcaster out there. I could do this blindfolded, ear folded. I could do the standing on my head. I am really I'm loving this part of my life right now, the podcasting. So thank you guys for always listening, allowing me to do this. I was talking earlier this week, you guys, about like kind of acclimating again to society, you know, and seeing your friends again. And I'm on day two of my diet. I thought I was going to die earlier, but all is good. All is well. We are still gung-ho on the diet. Because my goal is, like I've always said, to wear jeans again. To wear jeans should be our... Did I talk about this the other day that one of the listeners, awesome girl, she put me in touch because I was talking about male Skims, Mims, you know, which Kim Kardashian, holler at me, let's do this. She told her friend, she goes, we don't have male Skims, but what we do have is torts. And then I read further, and torts are towel shorts. And she's like, would you like a pair of torts? And I was like, is it free? And then, you know, and then I was like, of course, but towel shorts. Where were torts around earlier in the quarantine when I had completely just settled into my bedroom? I just would have been fully in torts the whole time. But now I'm getting a pair of torts sent to me, towel shorts. So what is that? Like you're in the shower, you're showering off, and then you go, I'll put on a pair of torts and just walk around. Torts. I can't stop thinking about torts, though. For real. I'm like, I am so excited to get my pair of torts. So I'm not joking. Like, I'm really excited. Like, it's no male Skims, but torts is its own thing. Like, I feel like torts is, I'm going to make torts the next big thing. Torts is going to be my legacy, you guys. I can't wait to show you pictures of me and my torts. How are you guys? Are you hanging in? Oh, I wanted to tell you one more thing. So I told you, like I said, I'm getting acclimated again. I saw a couple friends that I have not seen in so long, and it was just kind of so weird. And then my buddy was like, hey, do you want to help me? He has like this soft play business, which soft play, I guess, is like a kid's company with like mats and balls for like 5 years and younger, you know, and he does like these birthday parties for kids, you know, and it's like COVID safe. And him and his wife, who I've known for so long, have this business that they started. And it's kind of kept them afloat, especially during COVID and stuff. So he had a shipment of like all this soft play stuff coming in from China. And he wanted me to go like, you know, an hour and a half away to pick it up. And, you know, he said, and I was like, yeah, you know what? That'll be good. I'll force myself to get out. You know, we're masked up. Everything's good. And it was like raining. It was like the first day it's rained in LA in so long. And we get there, and it's like this whole rigmarole. And then I'm like loading stuff into this truck. And then it's just like the truck's getting full. We're trying to put it in like Tetris blocks. And then I realized I could do it. Like, I could do another year in my bedroom, you know, like maybe I'm rushing to like reform relationships that I should just like, you know what? It's okay. You know, would I rather move a truck or would I rather stay in my room? And I think the room is always going to win every time. I'm completely joking. That was my buddy Patrick, who I went to college with, and he is like one of my BFFs. So it was actually just great to see him. And I got to, they had a baby during quarantine, you guys. You know, so I talked about this the other day too, I think, you know, 6 months old about or something. And I got to see her again today, and she has the best smile, just the best smile. And actually that reminded me of Real Moms of Bravo, who I don't know if you've heard yet. They were amazing. Sarah Heron from Us Weekly was amazing. BBF Bravo. Candace was amazing. We've had a week of amazing interviews, but today, you guys, today is someone very special to me. And I'm not even, this is not being a facetious in any way. We have one of my favorite writers, Nomi Fry from The New Yorker, as seen on Instagram and as seen on Twitter, famous on both. She really is honestly one of my, I love the way she looks at the world. I love the way she looks at pop culture. And I will tell a little bit more about how I reached out to her in a sec, because I want to first, but I'm just so excited to have her. But first, I want to go over some more day in pop culture like I did yesterday. And I was such an idiot. I went to bed and I was like, I should have named that segment. And then I was like, what? And then I was like, of course, the name was already there. All these articles are usually from the Daily Mail. So we are going to go back to calling it the Bailey Mail. Do you see what I did? See, my last name is Bailey, and then it kind of rhymes with Daily. So, you know. Okay, I just wanted to make sure you were impressed as I was when I thought of it. Okay, so here's some really, let's go over the day in pop culture. Okay, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, you guys, they have that creepy Hidden Hills mansion that Kanye didn't let her put any furniture out, and it looked like kind of like a adobe stucco Star Wars kind of hut inside and just very bare, and it looked like the setting of a horror film. Well, guess what, folks? Kim Kardashian gets to keep that house, and she says it is best for the kids. But I don't know, man. I mean, I feel like that house should have been one of the first things that, you know, Kim would let go, you know, like, I mean, like, that mansion has always scared me. There is a cover story of it in Architectural Digest a couple years ago, and literally I couldn't sleep for a week. It was so scary in there. There was one time they showed, you know, you would see on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which actually, you guys, comes back March 18th, I believe, for its final season before they moved to Hulu. But I remember you would see flashes of it on the Kardashian show, and I would just be like, what the hell is going on? Like, I will not ever be famous because that is not a house I would ever choose to live in. Like, I want stuff around me. Like, I want bookcases. Obviously, we could get rid of my DVD cases, but I want things. I mean, I know that's, I don't mean I'm like possession hungry, but possessions do make me feel good. They sometimes bring a smile to my face. I'm not talking about big possessions, but I, you know, I'm looking around my room right now. I have some Daft Punk action figures. I have a photo of my dad, a photo of my parents. I have a Sutton mug from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I'm telling you, I have collectibles. That's all I'm saying. And Kanye would not let me keep any of those in the house. You know he wouldn't. Like, there is no man cave at Kanye's house. It's just a cave. And that's really scary. And then one time they showed North's bedroom and it like had toys, but it was like very interestingly placed. And I'm like, kids are supposed to go nuts and like be able to play everywhere. And like, he's like in some kind of creative journey where like less is more. And I appreciate that. But you know, Kim was raised, like how we saw Kim raised, she was anything but artistic. You know, like she liked stuff too. And so it always cracked me up that that's where Kim wound up, was in like this bear mansion when, I don't know, it's just funny. And then I would just love to see those conversations of her showing, you know, Chris and Courtney and Chloe the house for the first time. And them, you know, they probably actually acted like they liked it because they're like, oh my God, Kanye's artistic. Oh my God, this is amazing. You know, they probably were like, try to convince themselves they liked it. They're like, I get this. I like this a lot. Yeah. I see what he's doing here. Yeah. But you know, deep down, they were like, oh my God, what have we gotten ourselves into? Kim, oh my God, I miss the Frankenstein guy you were married to for 42 days. So anyways, Kim gets to keep that house. I do think if the kids are, you know, if the kids are digging that place, great. But it always scared me. But it turns out I don't have to live there, so we're all good. Let's see what else. This was actually, okay, so I've told you so much, and I've gotten so much, not flack, but a lot of people encouraging me to get into The Crown. And because I said, I just don't get the royals. But I got to tell you, this Meghan Markle, Harry interview with Oprah on Sunday on CBS, I am starting to like a few things about the royals, because now, all of a sudden, it's starting to get into my territory. Meghan Markle is saying that the royal family is setting her up. Is like, basically, they're talking shit about me and putting out rumors that are not true. And I'm like, ding, 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 ding. I'm in. I'm fully in on this. I love it. Who's spreading rumors? Let's get into this. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then she took Harry away. Now, to me, it is getting fascinating. I just still, my one holdout, you guys, help me deal with this. Why? This is basically, she was like one of the actors on Suits, like we talked about, on like TNT. And I don't know a lot of other royals that have been on TNT shows. But how all of a sudden, it's like she's treated like this, like kind of angel and like, I don't know. Like, the press I do hear is that there's half the press saying that she's an angel, half the press say that she's manipulative, she's manipulating Harry. Like, what is the real answer, you guys? I'm catching up on all my Meghan stuff. So which way do we go? Do we love Meghan, or do we believe the royal side? And if we believe Meghan, do we have to hate the royals? Does that mean I don't have to watch The Crown if we hate the royals? There's so many, but I got to tell you, this hooked me in a little bit. Like, if I guess the only other thing that could do it is if Megan was like, I love Counting Crows and Batman. And I'd be like, holy shit, I'm in. And Harry was like, I'm going to Dunkin' Donuts with Ben Affleck for a coffee. And I'd be like, oh, my God, where have you guys been all my life? You know? Let's see what else. Chris Harrison, I think I mentioned this yesterday. He is going to be appearing on ABC Good Morning, their Good Morning show. He's doing another interview. It's going to be airing, I guess, Thursday morning. When you hear this, he is doing a video interview with Michael Strahan. And Michael Strahan's asking him the tough questions about why he defended Rachel Kirkconnell in her photo where she posted the antebellum plantation themed party that she went to. Harrison says it was a mistake. I made a mistake. I am an imperfect man. I made a mistake and I own that. Okay. He owns that. That's good. We'll see what else the interview says. The only thing is that he said he was going to take some time away to learn and to, you know, let things heal. And if I'm not mistaken, it's been like a week and a half. And usually I'm a dummy, so things take me at least 3 weeks to learn. So I'm, you know, a week and a half, I'd at least, Chris, do 2 weeks. It is funny how, like, they're trying to get him out there immediately. Like, just chill out, bro. Like, take some time to actually maybe kind of learn. And I know you want to get back out there, but I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. You guys, somebody is upset again. Alec Baldwin, boo-hoo, he deletes his Twitter, you guys. He deleted his Twitter account after being skewered on social media for commenting on Gillian Anderson's switching accents just weeks after wife's hilarious scandal. So I guess he posted a link to a story about the reaction to Gillian Anderson's American accent. He added, switching accents, ? That sounds ... fascinating. And then, so he's trying to make a bigger point about his wife, Hilaria, or Hillary, as we like to call her in Boston. So he did that thing. It was being all clever and cute. And he still is trying to justify all of this because I'm sure that helps him, you know, live a better life if he can fully believe that his wife was telling the truth this whole time about whatever. But the response drew the ire of a number of online users who pointed out the differences between Anderson and his spouse, Hilaria. There is no way comparable to your wife pretending to be from Spain, one user wrote. Gillian Anderson is American. How did people not know that? She was born in Chicago and never pretended outside her acting to be British. As Margaret Thatcher in The Crown, that was a role. You should know that. One user said that Hilaria pretending to have a foreign accent in order to lay claim to a culture and life story that isn't hers just to exoticize herself is not the same thing as Gillian Anderson reasonably speaking two different dialects of English due to her actual life story. So I guess he just got bombarded to the point where he has deleted his Twitter account. So folks, we did it. We won. Mission accomplished. We got him. We got him, folks. He is so stubborn, Alec. If you followed Alec in the press, you know, remember when he called his own daughter, I think, like a pig, and the voicemails were released? This is like, God, 15, 16 years ago. That's his daughter, Ireland. I don't know if you remember that, but if you look it up, you can hear the voicemails. They're wild. I just think it is interesting that he just can't move on. He wants to be right. Alec is always, this is why he gets into fights with so many paparazzi. This is why he won't, like, he'll get into fights with fans on Instagram and Twitter. He cannot leave well enough alone. And, like, everybody has their Achilles heel in pop culture. I mean, we all do in life anyways. But in pop culture, you always know there's that one thing that if you push that button, they cannot walk away from because it truly eats at them. And that is, like, we all have that sickness, but it is fascinating that Alec Baldwin, he needs to be heard. He needs to be right. And it is going to, I don't think it's going to really cost him anything, but he's always caught up more in these situations than his actual work. You know, Alec Baldwin has had many ups and downs in his career, and he's kind of coming off the tail end of riding a big wave from, you know, being heralded as playing Trump on Saturday Night Live for a bunch of years. But before that, he had a dip. Before that, he had 30 Rock, which was huge, won a lot of Emmys. Which, by the way, I was just listening to the oral history of The Office. I don't read anymore. I listen to my books. And it was fascinating. And they pointed out all the time Steve Carell should have won and Alec Baldwin did win. The writing on 30 Rock was so top-notch. But people were pointing out in the book that Alec Baldwin's part as Jack Donaghy on 30 Rock is a little bit, you know, when the writing is that sharp and there, like all he had to do was just ride the wave in a very brilliant, brilliant way. Like he's one of my favorite parts of 30 Rock, but Steve Carell, they were arguing, kind of put this humanity in making this just cringeworthy idiot lovable and had a big heart. And then you realize, you know, Michael Scott at the end of the day just wanted to be loved by everybody so much, which made him a complete doofus. And they always thought Steve Carell should have won. So I thought that was an interesting take on things. But yeah, Alec Baldwin, it goes up and down. It'll be curious to see where this, I bet he will be back on Twitter in the next 7 days. So nobody out there be sad. Okay. I don't want you guys to be sad at all. Guess what? In the Scott Disick, watch, we need to talk about Scott again. And by the way, I talk with Nomi about Scott and Amelia, and I loved getting her thoughts on this. But Scott has debuted a new kind of like pink mohawk. The guy is doing something different with his hair every day. He's kind of like, I don't know, Meghan McCain of South Beach. Ooh, that's a good one, Ryan. but he's doing something different. And the thing is, it's like, it is fun to play with your hair. It is. I used to do it all the time when I was a kid. It was really, I would try to do like, I want to do a little curl like Superman or, you know, anyways. But the thing is, in a lot of these pictures, I think I'm bringing my own experience to this. I find them very sad because you see this guy desperately trying to be younger than he is. And it's like, we know, Scott, we know the life you've been through. We know you're a father, you know, you're, I think, a decent father. And it's just like, it's okay, man. Like, you can have regular hair and look handsome. Like, remember when Scott went through his American Psycho, Brett Easton Ellis three-piece suit phase? Let's get back to the Lord. Like, this guy where he's, like, trying to be, I don't know, like, a member of Odd Future or some kind of, like, hip-hop collective that he just looks awkwardly out of place. Like, he really, to me, is starting to look like Jonah Hill. Like, but Jonah Hill can pull off Jonah Hill style. Scott Disick cannot pull off Jonah Hill style. You know, like it's to me, Jonah Hill's style is authentic. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, like Jonah Hill is kind of weirdly been known in the last couple of years, actually a style maven, his very own personal style. But Scott Disick just comes off like the glossy version of that, which comes off really fake. And the mohawk just screams Travis Barker. But Travis Barker's mohawk was always authentic. So it's like there's like a single white female thing happening where Scott's like, I will become him. I will become him. Drum lessons start tomorrow. Like, I have no doubt, like the guy from Blink 182 that left the band, I bet Scott will start taking pictures with him. He's like, do you want to start a band, man? It's just like me and Amelia will be there and you. So anyways, there's so many cries for help. And I just hope we get to him before it's too late, because we all, at the end of the day, want Scott to be happy, right? In Vanderpump Rules news, Sheena Shea had her baby shower, and it is the first time we have seen pictures with all the OGs except for Stassi from that cast. We had Ariana, Kristen Doty, Brittany Cartwright, we had Charlie Burnett. Yeah, like I said, no Stassi of Sheena, of course. It was really... Oh, Katie Maloney, looking very The Craft almost, in like kind of a black ensemble. But it was good. It was like, and I was so sad because I was like, man, this would have been a half good episode of Vanderpump Rules, and it's just now a real life event. And also, I talked to Nomi a lot about Vanderpump Rules, so I can't wait for you to hear that as well. But anyway, so Sheena Shea, congratulations on your baby shower. I don't know if this is one of many baby showers, but we will see. And finally, you guys, finally, before we get to our interview, Hannah Berner, Burn Dog, is engaged to comedian Dez Bryant after 8 months, count them, 8 months of dating. Now, congratulations is in order. We are very happy for Hannah. They, People Magazine published their engagement photos. It is actually a photo that she had posted with Dez, I believe, around Valentine's Day, or that's when he did propose to her, was on Valentine's Day, but they airbrushed the ring out. So now we're the real photos with the ring. She said yes. That's all amazing. If she is happy, he looks happy as all hell. I hear he is madly in love with her, which is just amazing. The only kind of thing that's weird here is 8 months, the timing. Okay, so the timing of this is very odd because 8 months would put us before Summer House started filming. And we know, though, when she went into Summer House, she was all crying about Luke and stuff like that. We know because Hannah was on my podcast in July, and she hinted at dating somebody, or she was in the mix with somebody. And we joked a lot about Luke on that podcast, but they went into that. And then Luke was on my podcast 2 weeks ago and said Hannah had a boyfriend going into the Summer House. So I'm really curious about what the hell is going on. And he looks fine. He looks happy. But if it was me, I'm so insecure. I would be so upset if I watched my girlfriend go in there and like cry over some other guy when he's there. Ugh. But anyways, congratulations, Hannah Berner. I'm excited to hear more about this and all the things. And I do have news that Dez will be on this season of Summer House. So we will be meeting him and getting to know him more. But I know he is an Irish stand-up comedian. Okay, that is the Bailey Mail. Let's get on to the main event. Our next guest, Nomi Fry, is a writer for The New Yorker, 3 years. Aside from that, she is just one of the funniest, wittiest, soulful, poetic people that I have ever read and now have gotten to talk to. Her Twitter account is nonstop, just laughs, but that even cheapens it. It's so much more than that. Her Instagram is great as well. There are so many phrases that I've picked up because of Nomi. There are so many little things in her articles that I will stop and think about or speak to people about. I just love the way she thinks. And she's a lover of reality shows as well. So asking her to do this, you know, of course you want to think, you know, I'm like, oh, that's, I love that she respects reality shows as much as we do. And it's also something that I can always hold up to my parents of like, look, here's somebody with actual taste that writes for The New Yorker that likes the same shows I do. So that's a huge thing. It was her birthday today. I'm recording this on Wednesday. So happy birthday, Nomi. You gave me the biggest gift. I reached out to her like a year and a couple months ago when I started the podcast because my therapist told me to like make a list of all like my heroes. And she was one of them, is one of them. And I know this just will weird her out, but she's just great. And she was so nice and said yes. And then I said, okay, great. And then I didn't know what to do next. And so I just let that die for like 5 months. And then I was like, crap, I was supposed to ask more about scheduling. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's so tough and I get so nervous about asking people I like to do the podcast that I'll be like, once they say yeah, I usually go, that's good. That's all I needed was a yeah. That feeds my soul. I don't even need to do the podcast at this point. The fact that you will do it is all that I need. Finally, she was able to do it. And we were going to talk about Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which we end up talking about a lot. But we talk about Vanderpump Rules, Scott Disick, what I think heaven's going to be like. And you got to hear my intro to this. I just want you to know I was so nervous, this intro. I thought I knew what I was saying. I've got to write down my intros now better because I wanted to give like a really good intro. And I usually am fine with my intros and I tank it at some point. I mean, I think it's still fine, but I was so nervous that I was like, there were so many other things I wanted to tell this person, you know. But anyways, I am so happy that my friend Nomi Fry is on here. You guys are going to love her. Really, a truly, truly amazing mind. So, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, Nomi Fry.
Doomsday, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, my next guest, I haven't been this excited for all of 2020. We're in 2021 now. This has made it all worth it. When I started this podcast, my therapist told me to make a list of everybody that I like. And this next guest I have liked for so long. Her writing, it is just so poetic, beautiful, but also like pop culture and art, it's all tied into it. And it just like, you know, that kind of writing that makes you feel less alone because all the weird stuff that you liked, she kind of likes too, or she points out and puts all of your thoughts in like this kind of, I mean, that's what writing does, is actually make things better to the reader. And she has made so much of my life better, but I decided to take this brilliant mind and have her talk reality shows with me. She is a writer for The New Yorker for the last 3 years. She basically is my John Mayer. Nomi Fry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ryan. Now there's nowhere to go but down after an intro.
This was it. This was actually, thank you so much. I just needed a minute. Yeah, that's all I needed.
Right. She's right. Goodbye, everyone.
No, but for real, I mean, I do want to read you something to start with, and I'm not going to tell you who wrote this. You might already be aware of this, but it meant, I just want you to maybe guess.
Okay.
So this says, in life, we meet so many people, some come, some go. I have been lucky enough to have a lot of great men in my life that I can call brothers and that I would go to war for. This man is one of them. We have one of those friendships that are just easy. Our wives tell us every day how similar we are, and I couldn't agree more. I look up to you constantly. We call each other just about every day to vent about things and talk about our future. We don't judge each other. We don't argue, which is weird because we are both extremely hard-headed. You have taught me so much in the past 5 years about life and recently about becoming a father. You are one of the best fathers I have ever met, and your girls are becoming such beautiful little women because of that. If I am half the father you are, I will be forever grateful. You have taught me to be selfless and to always remember life is short. Sometimes that gets us in trouble. You are the most generous person I have ever met, not only to your friends, but to complete strangers, which I've witnessed firsthand. I am so proud of your recent accomplishments. I cherish our friendship every day and look forward to us growing old together. Love you, man. Nomi, who is this? And who
oh my
is this
God,
to?
This is on literally on the tip of my tongue. Like this is fairly recent.
Very recent. Very recent.
What was it?
It
I know
is
it's something like really weird. It's like it's not going to be what I say right now, but it's like Ryan Phillippe and like Travis Birkenstocks or something. Like,
it is much closer to the home. It's much closer to the home, the reality show home that we will be talking about.
Okay.
I think this is a great entrance point.
Okay. To what we'll be talking about. So it's clearly two fathers.
It's two. You would think it was two fathers. Is somebody about to be, he presents himself as a father, but somebody about to be
Jax,
a father.
Jax and Tom Schwartz?
Jax and Randall Emmett. This
what?
Is Jax's yes. Instagram post to
yes.
Randall Emmett 2 days ago.
Yes.
He has never written anything like this to Britney in his life. And this is, I mean, it just spilled out of the man.
I mean, he is, you know, as a man who took his father's ashes and to his wedding.
Yeah. And had a seat for it. Had a front row seat for the box.
The ashes, the urn. Yeah.
Yeah.
He is clearly looking, he's searching for a father figure.
Yeah.
And, you know, he might have just found it in Randall.
Well, you know, I love that you take that actually just so serious, way more serious than I am, because in my mind, I was just like, wow, he is really living inside of Randall's butthole. You know, like he's really, he's really up there trying to just
what
make
does
sure
he want,
has-
though? What
What's
does
that?
He want? Does he want like a seat on the PJ? Like what's
he's now posting things. I know you don't keep up with Jax like I do, but he is posting things with the hashtag set life. And the rumor
oh,
is
about the movie.
Randall like, might have made him a producer on a movie right now.
No.
And he posted a picture next to Robert De Niro's chair and goes, not a bad day of work. And he was
wow.
in overalls. Yeah.
But why would Randall do that?
I think Jax has some kind of information on Randall. I think I have this weird theory that Randall has footage of all of their like gender reveals and stuff and is pitching that as a show.
Oh,
but that's
so
just like,
there's like, so there might be some like business dealings behind the scenes that might come to fruition. And so everybody is being like extra nice to each other.
I mean, yeah, but I think Jax is even taking that a step further. If we know Jax, like if we know Jax's psychology.
For Jax, the thing with Jax is, one of the many things with Jax.
Oh, please tell me the thing about Jax.
So the thing about Jax is, remember when there was that point, I don't think it was the last season, I think it was the season before that, where there was that like really like mate trumped up arc where Jax suddenly announced that he wants to be a hockey commentator on a Tampa.
He got the social media PR job at a Tampa hockey team. And so that was the season finale, was like, guys, I might be moving. And Sandoval and Schwartz were like, okay, dude. Yeah. They were like laughing at him because they knew it was made up.
But also what I wanted to say about it. So it's this like totally random, like relatively marginal thing. It's not like, oh my God, I'm like, I'm going to get an Oscar or like I'm curing cancer. It's like some random thing that then he talks about as if, so remember when he said, when Brittany was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, it's always been my dream to be a hockey. Yeah. It's been my lifelong dream. And she's like, I've never heard this in my life.
Yes.
What are you talking about? So it's the same thing with like, okay, he has this like whatever relationship with Randall. They're like buddies. They're like, maybe they have some business together. And then out comes spilling this over the top, like out of control, you know, hyperbole, like this insane thing that's like way like overblown.
Yes. I mean, I think that's his whole life though, is that like, it's like his whole life is fake it until you make it. Or, you know, I teach actors all the time out here and it's, you'll see them post, they'll really go off on the gram posting like at an audition, or if they get one line on a set, it's always set life. This is amazing. You know, wow.
Right.
And I think Jax has really done that to great effect, but I feel like he's might be the overindulgence of romance with Randall might also be because he has been, you know, let go or have left the show, and maybe he's
looking
waking
for the next, he's looking for the next peg. He's looking for like the next thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I often think like right now with Vanderpump, it's really interesting to me to think about these guys. And I'm a little worried, like I'm worried about some of them more than others.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm like, okay, so what's next for the gang? You know?
They compare themselves to Friends, except that they always fail to realize that Friends were actual actors playing the Friends. And so they think, you know, it's like, so, you know, David Schwimmer and those guys were able to like get more work. Lisa Kudrow did the comeback. But like for reality stars, it's very different where you don't just go to another reality. I mean, sometimes it'll, you know, I can't imagine Jax being on Siesta Key or something. But we now have to take care
of
these
people. Maybe he could be like the last season of Siesta Key, where like there was that like sudden weird producer who was like,
yes.
He was dating like, I mean, I shouldn't say he's 80s, like my age or something, or he's like a little older, but he was dating like this 23-year-old, what's her name, Madison.
Yeah.
And so maybe Jax could kind of like hitch his like wagon to the star of like a much younger reality star.
But then we of course have
like
to worry
Scott
about Brittany
Amelia
and the baby. Well, that's what I was just going to bring up. You had talked about, you had mentioned Scott and Amelia, I think on Twitter at some, I mean, we've all mentioned it because it's just it's really just buzzing around town.
One thing I want to say about them is, how long is this vacation lasting? It's been,
I'm starting to
day.
Think it's their actual life because it doesn't seem like vacation.
No, it is, because that's their life. Right. And
yeah,
that's their business as well. But it's like insane. Every day it's like the Daily Mail has like 7 items about them, like on the yacht or like out to dinner with like Jonathan, you know, Chaban or like, or whoever else. And it's just, you think, wow, it's their life, which I know is not a bit, it's not a surprise. Like it's a very obvious point to make, but like, you know, it's insane.
The thing that, you know, is like the hardest part of Scott's life potentially right now is like which color he's going to dye the hair for the next day.
It's today. It was pink.
Yeah. And like Amelia already just went really viral with the hard nipple photo on Sunday. And I mean, it's like I'm wearing hard nipple things where and I'm an older man, but I really was influenced by that. But do you get that one photo, though? And I hate to read into the gram, as you like to call it, but like he just looks like he's like looking into the distance.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't really know.
He's like dead-eyed. Yeah.
And she looks completely, I mean, I don't want to say completely there, but completely like Goo Goo Gaga.
I mean, she's besotted. She's besotted with the older man. But she also must know, I think it's probably, again, much like Randall and Jax, I think it's a combination of some real feelings there, you know, and some real like engagement and infatuation, perhaps. And also kind of like, obviously, this is their business. So like, you know, they've both been getting attention for this.
So it's all in a day's work. We're getting the clicks.
It's all in a day's work. I mean, she's doing all of these like influencer type spawn things on her gram. I checked out her gram a couple of days ago. I don't follow her. Maybe I should start following her.
What if she starts tweeting about you of like, know me, Fry, follow me. It's time. It is time to follow.
I mean, I have to say, I don't know that much about those girls, but they seemed like on Beverly Hills when they were featured, they seemed like pretty sweet. Like they seem like sweet young girls, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really, I mean, I don't know a lot about them except what the show presents in this.
Sure. I mean,
of course. You know, she, you know, had a hard time. They had a hard time with the fashion line.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like Lisa was doing a lot of the work and she had a hard time finding the right apartment, but finally found one.
Yes, when Mauricio, or rather, I think it was
Mauricio's daughter. Yeah.
Was it Farrah? Was it Kyle's daughter?
Yeah.
And Mauricio's stepdaughter.
Yeah.
Helped
put her in like where they had a 24-hour concierge service, right. You know, because she had a lot of list of options, didn't want to be on the first floor, but didn't want to be on the third floor, needed it like light, cool. So
a kitchen island, marble kitchen.
Yes, whatever has happened in that apartment has worked wonders for her. But I would love to have seen the blossoming of the romance between Disick and Amelia. Like, how
this
does that
like
go down?
It's my dream
to see how that works.
Yeah, to see. Yeah. To see what's happening.
Do you ever think about this like in the terms of like well, I would love to see a night of one acts, you know, potentially off Broadway where you would see these things come to life, or
yes,
you know, like 100%. Or even like the elevator ride between Beyonce, Jay-Z and Solange, the 100%. Airplane ride.
That's like porn to me. I mean, yeah, that me too. Would be like my porn. Like, yeah.
Do you ever like just sit there and fantasize about what happens in these moments? Like it's like fan
all
fiction
the
almost.
Time. All the time. Like it's all I want is I don't want to know things to tell anyone. Like I'm not, you know, my impulse isn't like, oh, then I'll have great currency. You know, I'll have gossip that I can like tell other people or like sell or whatever people do with gossip or even write about. For me, in fact, which is why I should say, I mean, of course, I can't. I don't know if it reads as true if I say it about myself, but I think I'm a good, generally speaking, a good secret keeper because I'm actually afraid of like, I hate conflict in my own life.
Yeah.
I guess I like watching conflict, like on reality television and so on, but I'm afraid that, you know, like a piece of information that I have will come between friends or like, you know, or like break up a couple.
Yeah.
I don't even know the types of things that can happen with like bad information. So in fact, I keep things very, like if someone asks me not to tell something, then I pretty much don't tell it.
So my next question.
And so my dream about these things is like it, not knowing these things in order to share them necessarily, but just to like know.
Yeah, it would scratch this itch.
Peering into the soul of man, you know, just like.
I don't know my thoughts on heaven per se, but there is a part of me that like, if heaven exists, I would love there to be like a heaven machine where you can like just go into a room. I mean, not like defending your life, well, maybe a little bit, but like where you actually get to put like, let me know the like who killed JonBenet, and they just tell you
right.
know, like, or what happened this, and they play it back for you. I mean, that would be one of the huge benefits of heaven is that like, you would get to know all of the answers, you know?
Right. I wouldn't want to know about myself. Like,
no, no, no. God.
I wouldn't want to know, like, oh, you know, like what people say when they talk shit about me, or like
if, would crush me.
If anyone like cheated on me, or, you know, or like anyone like kind of undermined me in any way, or anything that has to do with my life, I would rather remain in the dark, I guess. I mean, unless it like impinges on someone's safety or my own or whatever. But I mean, after the fact, I don't think I really want to know.
Yeah. I mean, they always show that in movies where they're watching their own funeral and stuff like that. Yeah. And I just figure it like, wouldn't you, if you're watching your funeral in heaven, it's like, then heaven is not working properly. Like there's no reason you should want to be watching people suffering because of you. And it makes me like really upset to think about, like, I would not choose that. You could do so many better things in heaven than that.
Like learn about how Disick and
yes, exactly. That's
came to be,
or just, I mean, I don't know. So the celebrity pop culture pool, just like it is, I romanticize it on a daily basis. I imagine it. And like, you know, sometimes it lets me down when I actually find out the true story behind things. I would rather live in a blind gossip kind of world where you get to just imagine, like, cool. Like when you learn the truth, sometimes it is not great. You know, it's like kind of boring sometimes.
And it can also be pretty dark.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, but sometimes I can dig darkness in that form rather than darkness in my own life.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Do you think Vanderpump Rules should continue? Do you think it has a possibility?
I don't
of
see
continuing?
How it could. I mean, I feel like it could continue if they found some really amazing cast members.
That, like, actually have relationships with each other.
That have relationships. I know it's like hard. It's hard at this point, right? Because people, as often happens, know what they're up against, you know, as often happens when you try to bring in new people into an established franchise. Yeah. So it would be hard to recapture the magic of the first few seasons of Vanderpump, which is really a perfect television show.
Yeah, they didn't even have to try. It was just
right there. Like, I mean, just imagine having the situation ready-made, probably not knowing it coming in when you were casting, of like having Kristen having her like sleep with Jax behind Stassi's back
during the movie drive,
cheating on Tom, you know, cheating on Stassi, and then keeping it a secret like all throughout until like the end of the second season. It's like just incredible. Like fireworks.
You couldn't write things like that.
Completely natural. So that doesn't, you know, and obviously that sort of thing does happen, but to have it kind of organically on a show revealed kind of in real time is, I don't know, felt pretty rare and magical.
And it almost, you appreciate it even more now that it's gone, in that when you go back and you're like, we had it all at one point. But then you see things like, I know you've tweeted about Selling Sunset before, and Selling Sunset is completely, you know, it's glossy, soulless. I mean, I can't get enough of it. I love it, but it's completely different way. I mean, like watching Romaine learn to speak English has just been what a journey. But it's completely different, watchable in a different way.
Yeah.
But you have to recognize it's a different enjoyment.
Yeah, it's a different enjoyment. I mean, Vanderpump in the beginning was like verite. I mean, it was really, these people, like, I mean, they're like they're shitty apartments.
It's the Dogma 95 or whatever that
it was
thing.
Dogma 95. They were like really, you know, yearning to become stars. Nobody knew who they were. Like, just everything about it was amazing. So yeah, so I don't think we can ever have that, but we could probably have, if we had like some really strong, like, okay, for instance, so we are going to talk about Salt Lake City, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So Salt Lake City is an example.
Thanks for bringing me back. Thank you.
Is it? No, but it's just a good example of, like, obviously it's a Housewives franchise. We've seen this. We've seen them, you know, for like, it's going to be like 20 years soon or something insane. You know, it's like whatever, 17 years we've had.
Part of the culture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everybody knows, everybody who comes on that show, like, knows what's going to happen, you know, but I think one of the reasons that it was like so good is that they were just able to really cast really good people, you know?
Yeah.
Explosive relationships, people willing to go there, the good and the bad, you know, like people like willing to bear it all, like mostly, I mean, I'm talking about Meredith, but you know, like in the service of like the show. So this isn't a good example of like a show that people know what's expected of them. And yet they were able to capture seemingly authentic interactions and kind of processes, you know, just because they cast really well. I mean, insane characters, great characters. So,
well, because these shows are relationships, right?
Yeah, it's relationships. So I would say, and like power differentials and stuff. So I would say if they were able, like say they start fresh, say we have the Toms as kind of like in the Lisa role, say, right? So we don't see their drama that much. We have like, you know, pregnancy, you know, like they've gone on to the next chapter. So they're like the parents in like a teen show kind of.
Yeah. The Jim Eckhouse and Cindy. Yeah.
Which they, right. The Jim and Cindy. So they started to do it with this season when they brought on, you know, all
Dana,
these,
and Danica, Dana and Brett. Charlie, yeah.
And, but it just wasn't, it was kind of halfway, I think. Like some, they still tried to have Sheena like sleep with Brett, and you know, they still.
Do you think an email goes out like, who's willing to sleep with new people in this? Like, is anybody still willing?
Yeah. So now that's done, you know, because they're like pregnant, you know, most of the older guard is like pregnant and all of that. But if they start fresh with like maybe the older crew as potential like guests, you know, or kind of like hovering in the background, and they have like a good tight crew, you know, of like people who are already working but not necessarily being filmed. Like say they just, you know, have like the people working at like a Vanderpump Place, maybe like the new, you know, they do an expansion on Tom, or whatever it is they were talking about before the pandemic. And then they just hire people and then they come in with the cameras. Like they don't cast especially.
Yeah, they let the relationships happen before any pressure of like cameras are on them.
Right. So maybe that could work. Obviously, that's like, you know, that takes time. And
yeah, like you'd have to destroy it to build it back up. And there's no, like, I mean, money doesn't really have patience. And like Bravo's not like, let's do the best for this show. You know, like, I mean, I'm thinking,
exactly.
You know, like, exactly. I mean, I worry about Peter, but other than that, I think they could, you know, spend the time.
Peter, interestingly, has had this parental role the whole time. So Peter would be an example of someone of what the old guard can become. The sidelines, you know, sometimes like having a little bit, you know, they tried to make Peter into something else early on. Remember when they set him up with Vale?
Couldn't carry it. Yeah.
Didn't work. Let's just have him as a dad, you know, who has like various like weird relationships in the background, maybe, but it's not the core of the drama. And the core of the drama is like the young sluts and studs, you know, who are like,
yes,
now working the tables.
Vanderpump Rules, sluts and studs. Like they should rebrand. Well, I was like, the only thing, if they want to rush into filming, like you're gonna have to have like Sheena deliver in the Sir Alley way to like really like. Could you imagine? Like that would actually be a way to really get people excited again. You know,
I really want Lala to join Beverly Hills.
See, that I would actually, because she angers me in Vanderpump Rules now, but if you switched her over to Beverly Hills,
it's perfect.
It really would fit so much. And I would love her. I would love her attitude, her clothing. Mm-hmm. Her clothing really stood out to me in this last season of like, oh, come on, we know you have money, but like all the other, it's so garish and stands out. And she's, it just didn't fit anymore. But yeah, I mean, I really wish Bravo would. And I think we might get in that with the rumored like Winter House that they're doing. And
Oh, yeah. So what have we heard about this so far?
Well, Nomi, what we've heard is that, okay, so Summer House is a direct, like, you know, spinoff Winter House, but it's going to be like a Big Brother type thing. It's going to be Craig and Austin from Southern Charm.
Okay.
We've got Luke and Sierra from Summer House, plus wow. Kyle and Amanda. No word on Carl. I'm hearing a possible Madison coming in at some point.
Wow.
There will also be new characters that we... What's that?
A-Rod? Yeah,
and of course, J-Lo. Yeah. And there will be new characters that we have not met yet with intermixed with the Bravo Lebs.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm hearing is like, it's kind of like a Big Brother style thing instead of.
Okay. So they're extending the sort of the idea. They're kind of like doubling down on the idea of like Summer House quarantine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm watching now. I'm a little behind. I'm only like two episodes in, forgive me.
Okay, so you got two more, and you don't. Yeah, yeah. No, you're just about to see like Luke and Hannah, like kind of like Luke, Hannah, Sierra, like the love triangle that nobody, you know, whatever. Like so,
right.
but at the same time, Summer House to me, I don't know. You know, you've talked about quarantine comforts before. To me, it's like a balm, you know, for my soul. Where
I just
even like the boxes, and I like to see them working, and I love when they put times where it's like 2:47.
Right.
Like
when
you know,
it
like
rushes forward.
Yeah. Like I love that. Like the specific. Like and then Carl started making his bed, so I started making my bed.
Oh,
and,
that's great.
Well, like it's very aspirational now, Carl's life for me, but. These are all like kind of comforting, but do you ever think about like watching the other media landscape with Netflix getting in the game, TLC just like exploding this 90-day universe, which they're calling it now. That Bravo kind of like we had a huge hands in creating this, and they kind of like not shit the bed, but like waited too long to like get in the game of doing these spinoff shows where like 90 Day Fiance, if you fart in a bucket, they'll do a series about it, you know? Like, do you ever like see that, like, you're like, Bravo, you got to get in the game here.
Right. I mean, Bravo does have, you don't want to cheapen the brand though, which sounds funny because like,
I am all about cheapening brand. Like that's my brand. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still, there is something not cheapening because obviously it often actually does look cheap and it's not like it's necessarily.
Oh, like, they're shooting with like GoPros, like, you know, like just Skype.
Right. So it doesn't look great, but I just mean it's consistent. The brand is pretty consistent and you want to retain that. You want to retain the same kind of
look and feel,
look, the same kind of demographic, you know, obviously different for different cities or whatever the demographic is, but like it's pretty constant and coherent. And I think that's a good thing that they have like the Bravo look and, you know, tone and all of that. But I wouldn't mind like, but the question is, do we really need like for instance, when they tried to do the Brittany and Jack's Kentucky Fever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't watch that. Because that seemed like a cheap, like, I understand it's like there's like a property and they want to expand it. But is it always necessary?
You're right. That was not necessary. And you always know when Bravo does a half hour show, you have to worry. You know, Watch What Happens Live totally works for me. I really actually love that show.
Yeah.
But when you do half hour, it's like, you know, Kim Zolciak, Bierman and Croy.
Right.
You know, that's
on
a half hour show.
Caravan,
They did a tour on the bus. And
on the bus.
I watched the whole thing. It was, I was completely useless. I mean, I had to stay in my room for a year, but like, I don't know. Sometimes I just get worried because I get very protective of Bravo in particular. So I'm like, when
that's
I see like 90 Day doing twice the ratings for like people that are like, it's like barely like, it's like filmed, like I said, with Skype, I get really frustrated because I want Bravo to compete when I'm like, we have a better aesthetic. We have a better look.
And like that it's we. No, but it's true. I feel similar.
Single white female. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, so I don't know. I just worry about that in that sense. I could talk to you about this stuff all day, but I do want to talk about Salt Lake. You did say, so this is a first season Housewives show. And for me in particular, I thought they knocked it out of the park. I thought it was fantastic. Okay, good. Like that's what I was, you know, I think there were so many moments, even within the first couple of episodes, where I was like, you just made the season worth it already.
Yes.
do you think we expect too much from our housewife shows now? Because I would read on Twitter of like, it's not for me. This isn't doing it.
Yes. Some people didn't like it. Like my friend Brett, who is a big, big Bravo person. And we like talk about it all the time. And, you know, he said that he thought it started really strong and he thought the reunions were excellent, but yes. He said in sort of the middle, it sagged. I don't really agree. I thought it was great throughout, like the Vegas trip. Absolutely excellent. The media in the Vegas or whatever she was, the hypnotist. Yeah.
Yes.
Remember when she hypnotized them and it was essentially like, close your eyes. You're feeling calm. Okay. Let's delve in.
But, I mean, those kind of character archetypes of like, you know, it harkens back to the dinner party from Beverly Hills with the
incredible.
You know,
yes. I love that about me. I can tell you when you're going to die.
I was hitting so many buttons and still feeling, it still felt like it was its own entity. You know, it didn't feel like it was just a carbon copy because
no,
these ladies
were very interesting.
No, it was
totally, because there were certain things that you really can't fake. Like, okay, Jen Shah, for instance, okay? The fact that she is like in a Pavlovian way really triggered. It's like a dog who got bit by a mouse one time and then he sees a mouse and he like goes insane.
Yeah.
So, or like, you know, a bull with a red, it's like she couldn't, it could not be helped that when she heard the name Mary, she
yes.
was driven to violence. Like yeah. she just couldn't stop. And it was so real. Like you could see, and in a way, I mean, she was like insane. Something is like, I don't know, something
wrong.
Is off, but I could understand it. You know how it is when like you have like a friend and they have a friend. And you don't like that friend. And then they're like, oh, I went to the movies yesterday. And you're like, with who? And they're like, oh, with Mary M. Cosby. And you go like, oh. So even you might not like shatter a glass, but when you hear the name,
yes, yes,
you just can't stand it. You're like, how can you like this horrible person?
And it eats at you. It eats at you.
And so the difference between most people and Jen Shah is that she just like is literally driven to actual violence when she hears that name. And it just can't be faked.
Wasn't it fascinating, though, to see in the reunions almost a not mea culpa, but like a Jen having to
it was
bow down to realizing the spot she was in of like, wow, I've really turned a lot of people against me and I want to be on this show, having to kind of, you know, hold out a hand and say, I'm sorry, Mary Cosby.
Yeah.
You know, and Mary, you know, I don't know if graciously she apologized as well, but right. she accepted that. But wasn't that a really weird turn for having such an angry, do you think anything?
You know, it's interesting. It was like Stassi season 4, I believe. What was the season?
When she came back?
Yeah.
She was gone
three or four. I think it was four.
Or yeah. They went when she with the Katie and Kristen.
Yes. And after like she left and was with Patrick in New York. Patrick, yeah. The devil spawn, like the worst person on earth.
I mean, and also who tells Lisa Vanderpump she has a nice ass when you meet somebody for like, the first time? Like, I don't like I'm not like a I mean, I just figured like you know not to do that, and especially with
no,
cameras
I mean,
on you.
Something was wrong with him.
Yeah.
He literally a sociopath, like something you could see it in his eyes that he had like some crazy manipulative game, but the ends of which were not clear. Like, I don't know why, but you could just see that something was off.
Yeah. How do we all see it? But she doesn't, or just women like bad boys.
Yeah. He fucked with her head, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like it was like the game. He gaslit her, as they say, but yeah. So when she came back and you could see she was like devastated, the relationship with Patrick didn't work out. You know, she was on the outs with Kristen and Katie. She had gained some weight because she probably like, you know, quit Adderall or something and was like, you know,
it's hard.
But she felt like you could see that she felt like reduced because of it and insecure. And so that was like, and she had to bow down like the entire season. So that was a little bit like the Jen Shah thing.
Yeah.
Although Jen Shah came back, like that lasted all of like 20 minutes.
The last part of the third.
Before she like went nuts with like the white privilege thing, which was really interesting, because I thought actually the way the other women, it's interesting because you see, I mean, probably this wouldn't have happened in like OC or something, you know, but I felt like the other women were smart enough and knowledgeable enough about the general discourse in culture right now to say, we understand there's white privilege. You know what I mean? To say
I mean,
you know what you're talking about. Yeah. Like, this is a real thing. Like, we're not discounting the fact that there's racism and that as, you know, as a brown woman, you have had to like, you know, contend with things we didn't have to contend to. That said, you threatened my life. Yeah, so like, you know, there's just.
I mean, like, and threat, like, which one when he goes, you said you were going to kill me.
Oh my God. Did you see that thing? Like on Watch What Happens, like, was it the woman who used to be on SNL, Vanessa?
Oh my God. Yes. Vanessa Bayer doing
Vanessa
the two
Bayer,
parts.
Vanessa Bayer, when she did like, with me and wait.
Ivita Tequila would never do that.
Oh yeah. And Lisa, Lisa Barlow.
so good.
It was really good. Both voices were really good.
Yes, like she
Whitney
was,
and Lisa.
I love when Andy's happy too. Like Andy.
Oh
had,
my
like,
God! It
was
makes
like
me
gleeful.
So happy when he was happy. He was like, yes, yes.
Well, isn't it nice in the reunions where you could tell Andy was in it? Because sometimes with these reunions now, when he's doing it for so long, it's like, you know, Elton John playing like Rocket Man. Like it's right. Like he's like just going through the motions, and sometimes. Yeah. Things will like now kind of slip through a little bit, and you know, but this, he was awake.
He was
alert.
He was awake. He was really, good. He was into it. And he asked the important questions. What was one thing that I was really impressed with when he was talking to Mary, actually, when he was asking her about the church and the whole thing about how she said her parishioners were like, they were cheap and stingy.
Yeah. It? Well, because she didn't get enough birthday cards from her parishioners. And so there's leaked audio.
Insane.
Yeah. She redeemed herself. Well, that's what I was going to ask you too, is like the second reunion we've seen something that they've never done before, which I found make it fascinating, was that they used it as an actual episode to give a backstory to an entire character that we weren't able to see really flourish throughout the season, like Mary Cosby.
Right, right.
A good half of it was all Mary Cosby answering allegations like the church, her money, her marriage. Yeah. And we've never really seen that.
Yeah, I know. No, it's she was the thing is that's another like amazing casting, because she is so, I don't know if it's guileless or like what is exactly the adjective that I would use, but the way she is just, you know, when they're like, when Andy was like, was there anything, or maybe it was like a viewer question, like, are there receipts to the fact that your grandmother, everything is propped up on the thing that her grandmother said, you should marry Robert Sr., right?
Yes. Yeah.
So then it comes to the fact that it's like, are there any receipts? And she's like, no, there's no receipts. Yeah. It's like, and she just like answers. It's just like so amazing that she's just like, the things she says are so out of control. Like the thing about the black youth loitering in front of a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Which is so insane to say. And she just is just like,
there's no over-explaining.
Oh, she was not... like, I like Robert Sr. because he's not black. She was like, he's black, but he's not black. Like the things she says are just like, it's insane.
And Heather, like, you know, Mary Cosby won't over-explain it. She'll let it lie. She'll be like,
she'll let it lie.
Yeah. And that's like a really interesting thing, because most of us will like try to over-talk the explanation, and she but that's what makes her a successful Housewives character. I'm shocked she's back for the second season. Like, I truly am, because I thought there's going to be legalities. You know, we see what happens with Erica Jane and stuff. And I'm like, you guys, when she was like flaunting her houses and lost count, and like, I'm like, that will show up in court one day. Like they can use this footage.
Yeah.
And she's back, which like shocked me. But the 22, like we also found out in this last reunion with Robert Sr. that he was 22 years old when
he married Mama.
That's what so I want a detailed timeline, like almost like a history of the Mormons, where it's like, where, because I was trying to be like, okay, 22, like it's like it becomes even darker where it's like, okay, so he was a young man. How old was Mary's mom at that time?
Probably about his age.
Right.
So or something.
And then, but I love that, like, that was another thing. It was like Andy said, which was a great push, was like, well, why didn't Robert Sr. marry your mother? Because that would have been probably yes. more. And she was just like, well, that's, she just didn't want that. That was not what she wanted. And I, you know, yeah. and it was just, but no real explanation. Robert Sr. said it had nothing to do with the money. But also gave Mary then, but then also there was like this, oddly, I hate that we're normalizing this, but I almost started to get like oddly. I was like, oh, that's so sweet when he said, like, you know, she's my co-pastor, even though that's not, you know, we're not allowed to, we're not supposed to say that. She's a first lady, but really she's my equal. She's a co-pastor. And he said, yeah. you know, which is not right to say, but she is. She's just an amazing, amazing lady. And I was like, that's really sweet to say, you know?
I know. But it also comes on the heels of their relationship, like seeming totally bonkers. And yeah. her constantly saying, basically, I hate him. I mean, not I hate, like, but we have no connection.
Yeah.
It was like, I drifted into motherhood and we're still married, but like, there's no engagement really.
No
like,
sex for the last yeah. couple of years, supposedly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what did you think the season when she introduced us to Charlinda, her housekeeper?
Oh my God, that was insane.
We find out Charlinda is her related yeah. to her and
that
said,
was
she's not my friend.
Yeah, no, that was insane. When and Andy as well in the reunion was like, wait, she's your aunt? Or like whatever it was. It was like, and she cleans your house. And she was like, yeah, she takes care of me and I take care of her.
Yes. And her mom cleans with her. So her grandma and her, like, so it's like, but then I love the, another thing that didn't explain is that wouldn't you like in a talking head interview, if somebody says, you know, like say, yeah, Charlinda has been a great friend to me as well as a housekeeper, just to be nice. She's like, no, yeah. she's not my friend. No, no. And then
she's like, only- she says, I remember it when, because I laughed. It was because it was so out of control. She said something like, yeah, I know she's been working for me for 20 years. I know nothing about her life. We never talk. And then she goes, and there's a pause. And then she goes, at the end of the day, she's family.
That's what I'm saying. You can't write dialogue like that.
Yeah,
like you can't even teach somebody to act like that because it's yeah. such a choice and yeah. there's no apology in it. Like I'm full of apologies all the time. There's just nothing going
I know.
On.
Can
in
you
there,
imagine
you know?
Like having like your like next of kin, like wax your like Chanel bags in like a uniform, you know, like cleaning your shit, you know, as
yeah.
you like are completely like a multimillionaire and they're like cleaning on their hands and knees and they're like your aunt
yeah.
or whatever.
I mean, that's the dream. That's the goal. That's the dream.
I mean, we all want that. I mean, yeah, let's not fool ourselves.
She's doing something right, obviously. Yeah. But I just want to, but when you think about going into a second season, I just love that, like, I saw that Jen into Mary. Cause I'm like, Jen's got to be like, maybe doing the long game here of like, who actually will want to even film with me at this point. Lisa Barlow, what do you think of Lisa? During the reunions, we really get to see, I think, in my opinion, where Heather is living, you know, as the internet says, rent-free in her head at this point. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, listen, over the course of the season, looking back, and if I can check my tweets, I feel like when I did at one point, I did power rankings.
Yeah.
And I think Lisa was my least favorite. Like I could not stand her.
Thought she was a mean girl on the show.
Such a mean girl. So stupid. Like I'm sure like smart in business or whatever. Like I'm sure she knows how to make money, but just such a like, egomaniacal, like again, apology less in like a different way than Mary, you know, more like socially acceptable, but just like narcissist, you know, just like the kids are horrible. I mean, the kids aren't like,
well, the kids are the kids seem fine, but it's kids, like my parents didn't encourage me to do deodorant as a
yeah,
brand,
the kids seem,
you know?
The kids themselves are kids, you know, you can't blame them. They're okay. They're just kids. But it's like as a way to spend time with them, like you do the fresh wolf line Fresh Wolf?
Yeah, that yeah, that's it. I'm a Fresh Wolf man myself, so.
Yeah. It's just so soulless, and she's such an idiot. It's like, it was very painful to watch. Just so, you know what? Smug and self-congratulatory, which is, there's that's nothing it. Worse.
Do you ever think works. That they had the rare thing for a housewife show of like they filmed a year ago and they actually got to watch it come out during quarantine and like kind of be exposed? You know, we saw them like fumble around on Twitter or, you know, Instagram, and then got to see people's reactions. And I always think about Lisa is that she thought, and also I find this is like Lisa, Meredith and Jen. I think Lisa and Meredith thought Jen was the star of the show because she was so loud.
Yeah.
And you can see them favoring Jen and even putting up with antics that most people wouldn't put up with immediately.
Right.
But then the show came out. And I think Lisa, especially, that's where Heather and Whitney really, because Heather and Whitney started to be fan favorites. And I think it completely crushed Lisa's psyche.
Yeah. Because I think it's very interesting. I thought that was one of the most interesting things this season was Heather's, you know, her, which I of course identified with, her deep hurt that Jen, Meredith and Lisa were like the cool girls for whatever reason. I mean, it like chills my blood to think that, but you know, like that's in the world of the show,
yeah.
In the world of Salt Lake City, it has to do with money. I'm sure it has to do, although Heather seems like fine money wise, but it has to do with some sort of like power rankings, like preconceived power rankings. And just the fact that she was feeling that Jen was tossing her aside in order to be friends with like, I don't know, the slim brunettes or something, you know, who are just
which is
like
so relatable. Like I mean, we all have been there, you know,
totally. And who are just, you know, it seems like they all have money. So it doesn't even feel like it's even that much. It seems more that Meredith and Lisa are more easily self-regarding and smug and unapologetic, whereas Heather always seems to feel like she has to apologize for herself.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought that was one of the main themes this season, and it was really interesting to see. And as you say, over the course of the season, it was like, oh, actually people like Heather. You know, and I think one of the things that will be kind of like a viewing goal of mine in the second season.
It's important to set those. Yeah.
Is to see, because you could kind of interestingly in the reunion, see Heather kind of still full of anger, you know?
Yeah.
But also kind of feeling herself a little bit more, you know, because of the season that had passed and the reactions to her from fans. How will this play out in the second season? Will Heather get too big for her britches? Like, will we come to dislike Heather? Will it go to her head? You know?
Yeah, that's what, like, the second season curse. I wonder about this with Leah McSweeney on New York as well.
Interesting.
You know, is because, you know, when you're gassed up that much by the internet, you know, it really, and I talked to Heather, and she had said, she thought everybody was going to hate her. She did not think so she was shocked. And then to be like, you know, you see that, especially in the third, where she makes a rare misstep where she kind of brings up her divorce again when Meredith and Lisa are having a moment between them and Heather jumps in and go, what about my divorce? You said, and it was a really weird. But if you're not used to confidence, if you're not used to people caring, it's going to be a clunky, it's going to be like a hard landing. And that's what I think we see, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm wondering how that's going to play out in the second season, because sometimes also there's the thing of like, you know, she is right, I'm sure, in terms of like her own story of not knowing how to express herself, you know, feeling insecure, like having her voice kind of taken from her by the church, like her husband, all of that. And so then her goal, not unlike mine, is like, okay, I'm going to find my voice. I'm finally going to then what happens is when that gets kind of, as you say, gassed up by the internet, will it be too much? Like, will she go over to the other side of being like kind of in her own ego and being like, I deserve this. I've been silent for way too long. And then it'll be like a shit show where suddenly she makes all these missteps and is like insane, you know?
Which is kind of an interesting way that I've learned to watch Housewives too. It's almost like a pro wrestling, like a WWE, where it's like, you know, well, Hulk Hogan used to be the hero and now he's the villain. Like yeah. You could kind of like do those switcheroos. And like, I walked away from these, from this entire three-part reunion going, I am willing. I mean, I would watch anyways, but I'm really excited and willing to watch all of these ladies. Like yeah. Even like, I don't love Lisa and Meredith, but I think they're essential with this group, you know?
Yeah. And also maybe I started feeling, as I said, I hated Meredith throughout the season because she was so smug and sure of herself and her voice and her manner, just like,
it's like Xanax, like weeded. Like, it's like, just, it's like, she's always like just in a meditative state or I don't know what it is.
Did I say Meredith?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I meant Lisa. I mean, Meredith is annoying.
Well, Meredith to me is just so like zoned out all the time.
Yeah she's so zoned Lisa. Out. Yeah. I meant Lisa. Although Meredith has her own smugness, you know, she does feel better than others. She thinks she's smarter. She thinks she's more refined. You know, she's
inherited Brooks' smugness a little bit. Yeah.
Brooks. Oh my God.
Brooks.
To know Brooks Marks is still up.
No, Brooks Marks is the land of opportunity in Canton, Ohio. That's where we're going. Canton. Like, what's that guy's deal?
A real. I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but something is wrong.
That's what I was saying. Like there, I was like, there's no, I know we're painting this as a love story of they're back together and they're, you know, we're working it out, but it's like, there's just no way that this is like, there's just no way this is working long-term.
There's no way. It makes my blood like
curdle
in my veins.
That
have gone on in this marriage, who can even know?
She says multiple times. She said we've separated multiple times.
I mean, can you imagine? And he's just so, he just reminds me, maybe it's because, you know, they're Jewish. I'm from Israel. They just remind me of like, he especially reminds me of like kids I grew up with or something, like this sort of like, he seems like a very familiar type. Like an annoying, like he constantly like pokes at you, you know, like he makes these jokes that aren't really funny that are meant to get under your skin. But then he's like, no, I'm just, I was just being funny. Like, why are you making such a big deal?
Like you won't let me see your phone. I'd let you see my phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, let me see your phone. Yeah. It's like really prodding.
Ugh, prodding. Horrible man.
Disgust. She's spitting, you guys. You can't see it, but she's spitting on the floor.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, like, who knows? You know,
He's like kind of like a life coach. Do you know, like, he's like an inspirational, which by the way, I didn't realize, is Canton, Ohio some big kind of spiritual, like landing spot? Like, well, that's where his job is. He's like, I'm in the land of opportunity in Canton, Ohio.
Is he really a life coach?
Somebody said, well, I mean, he's always posting inspirational phrases and stuff like that.
Got it.
And
a lot of girls have slid into his DMs.
Well, I don't know if you really, it might be upsetting for you this time, but no, it's just a weird relationship because they're both, and also that to know Brooks Marks is to love Brooks Marks. I'm like, I feel like we've been presented Brooks Marks and I don't love Brooks Marks. I mean, I don't dislike Brooks Marks. I mean, but it's just, it's another thing. Like,
I dislike Brooks Marks.
I mean, I know, but I mean, where did you fall in that debate of, is it all right to criticize Brooks Marks or a, quote unquote child on a Housewives
show?
First
of all, Brooks Marks is of age. Okay. I will say this. Brooks Marks is 21 years old. Second, Brooks Marks has made himself a big part of the show. This is a talking head. Yes. This is not like Portia, like criticizing Portia Umansky or something, you know, or like whoever, you know, or like even a teenager. This is like a person, he quit school for the semester. He's a designer. He showed his design. He was benefiting from this. Clearly intentionally, which, you know, props to him, whatever. But he was a character, like, and he got in the business. He got in their business with the whole vagina thing.
I mean, I will always, like, that's another thing that I would love to know is like, did him and his sister Chloe, like, why did they go to Best Buy of all things? Remember when they left and they're like, yeah, we're going to Best Buy at like 9 p.m. at night? I'm like, is Best Buy a club in Utah? Like, is it really the the electronics store? Like, because it just didn't, because like, wouldn't you love to see that? Like, send a camera crew with them. I want to see him walk around Best Buy, you know, judging things at Best
Buy.
Sort
of like picking up things and putting them down.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know? But yeah, he seemed very judgmental. Like, he already seems like somebody, one of those guys that like I can already tell wouldn't like me, you know, like I feel
totally
judged.
I mean, he would be my mortal enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he wouldn't listen. I wouldn't. He's a character.
Yeah.
He's not a child. He's very young, but he's also like a consenting adult, you know, at this point.
I'm doing a 4-part spinoff podcast of just shitting on Brooks Marks, you guys. So I know
I feel bad.
No. I'll cut all of it. Naomi loves her. I know I got to wrap it up here, but Whitney, and what is your opinion of Whitney overall? And I guess you could throw Heather.
I like her. I was a little, the whole thing. I was wondering about her motives at Coach Shaw's birthday party.
Why make the mistake of like, know not to do that, but was she taking a bullet for production, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, because it was clearly everything unraveled from there on, you know. This was like the moment. So I don't know if she was like talked into it, or if she wanted to make herself, you know, like a central character in that way. Or maybe she was just sort of drunk and was like, I don't like that Meredith and Lisa are sort of getting off scot-free, you know?
Yeah.
And me and Heather are like left in the dust. So Jen should know that they're talking shit about her to Miriam Gusby.
Yeah, no. I really grew to like Whitney, and
I like Whitney, and I identified with like her journey, you know, with her dad. I really rooted for him. It's kind of heartbreak. The whole situation is heartbreaking.
Yeah, that was like really, because we did see like, and I'm like, I got so like, I know he probably was like, yeah, I'd love to be on TV. Let's do this, you know, and then couldn't, like the fact that we all made fun of his hair and stuff. And it's like, man, like I could have told you that was going to happen. Like, I mean, know. But at the same time, like the fact that we saw her try so hard, and we've, you know, she told us she's tried so many years financially.
I'm sure she has. It's like a great burden to have a parent like that who keeps fucking up, you know, because of a disease, but it's a burden for a child.
And to see that on national television, you know, amplify that.
To see that. I mean, she came out as the caring daughter from it. I think she really is. And we all rooted for him to get it together. I don't know. I hope he can get it together at some point. It's a bad disease.
I love the, but like, even it was very, I thought, uplifting to see him go to the hair demonstration.
I love that. And I think I posted something about it, and you commented he was a rock star in there.
Well, because he was like, oh, you can do four ways. You can do the side, you can do the, he was charming. All the ladies were laughing. And I was like, this guy knows his hair, you know, I think.
Yeah, no, he's a professional.
Okay. So the discourse on Salt Lake, I believe, will go on for years and years. And hopefully we can talk another time about this. I wanted to quick ask about your writing, because you did a Jurgen Teller story today that just came out in The New Yorker. And that he was the guy for W Magazine. He's been getting a lot of press because it's just very, just celebrities out in the wild, if you will, and getting a lot of heat for that.
Yes. So I wrote, this is for the New Yorker website. It just came out, and Jurgen Teller, you know, one of the top fashion photographers in the world, and has been for like
decades right?
now. Yeah. And, So it was like a portfolio of like the best performances, so-called portfolio in W Magazine. It was shooting like, I don't know, like more than a dozen, I think. So like maybe 20 stars, including like Clooney and like Jared Leto and, you know, Lakeith Stanfield and Tessa Thompson and a bunch of other people. And most of them were shot on the street in West Hollywood. A friend of mine, my friend Chris showed me where it was, like, took pictures. It's near his work in West Hollywood, I guess. And it was just these people sort of like on the street, very like, I mean, they were wearing like designer clothing and they had hair and makeup, but they were pretty raw looking. And a lot of
people, like Riz Ahmed said, it was like two clicks, like it was in and out.
Yeah, yeah. It was very snapshotty. And people were like, my 5-year-old could do this, you know, like, this is disrespectful. Like, why are they shooting these stars like looking like that? And it's just like, I've always loved his work. And I just thought it was very actually refreshing. I mean, who cares that you can, I mean, being a photographer is like the whole point of photography is that it is like a click. Like, what are people expecting? Like, obviously some photographers like shoot someone for like an hour or 2 hours or whatever. I'm not saying, but like, I didn't say this in my piece, but like the thing that when photography was invented, people were like, oh, it's ruining painting, you know, like it's, oh, this is, so what's the artistry here? Like, if you could just do it with a click, like, but of course, like photography is, it's more than the click. It's about like a point of view and, you know, an aesthetic and a kind of like a consistent way of looking at subjects and creating a body of work. And his, like Jürgen Teller's body of work is about, I mean, it's about different things, but it's also about like shooting people in a way that's like kind of like sexy, but like not idealized necessarily.
You brought like up a Kanye West photo earlier in the article.
Yeah. I used to work at T Magazine, the Time Style magazine. And I guess it's almost 6 years ago now, we were closing a story that had Kanye on the cover and Jürgen Teller was the photographer. And the photos again were very kind of like low key, unadorned. You know, there was some in the studio and some like outdoors, but like Kanye was very dressed down, you know, just in a t-shirt and jeans and boots and like one gold chain. And when we were closing the issue, I noticed that I was wearing like jeans and a black t-shirt like Kanye and a gold chain. And so my friend took a photo of me in the magazine, like copy room against the wall. Like, to mimic, because that the aesthetic is kind of like snapshotty, right? Which is what people were, partly what people were angry about, that it seemed like lazy, you know, and not like, you know, all done up and glossy. But that's, you know, that's the point of this photography.
But I love that you say like, you know, isn't stardom in general is the ultimate form of privilege.
Yeah. Like what we're so worried great. That we're worried that these stars aren't getting like respect that they're due. Relax. Yeah. Like, you know,
and
plus I think they look great. You know, I think it's like, you know, sexy and they're attractive. And
but I love your article because you made me actually rethink my initial, like, you know, sometimes we just are so used to so much information coming at us you do like real quick judgments and stuff. And I thought that was, it actually, your article made me stop and kind of pause. I went back and looked at the photos, but, and you in the article, just like being a little bit ugly is cool. And I just thought that was like the coolest way to end. I mean, that to me is like, I'm going to get that tattooed on me, you know?
I know. I mean, it's funny because actually I tweeted that, but I tweeted it like maybe a week before these photos came out, just like not in relation to the photos. I just thought it in my head because that's what I don't know if it's what I like to tell myself or like an aesthetic I like try to cultivate or that attracts me to other people. And then when the photos came out, I was like, oh, okay. I was already talking about this. This is exactly what I was thinking about, or that this is the kind of thing that I was thinking about when I was tweeting this like earlier in the week. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to put it in the piece because that's like, that was kind of like what I was feeling about it without having known about these photos yet.
I mean,
but
I
this
like
kind of aesthetic. And also, you know, it's like my age. I grew up in the 90s. It's like, this is the aesthetic that I've always liked. And grew up on. Like, yeah. I've been looking at his photographs for like 30 years now, you know, so it was a chance to talk about that, I guess. Because, you know, all the young kids, they don't necessarily know, and you got to teach them.
You got to show them the way. As Whitney you Houston show the says, kids. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Exactly.
Does that happen a lot in writing? Or like what actually, do you have like spider sense on like what you write about, like what attracts you to a story or?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I suggest things. This was suggested to me, and often now my editor, who's great, you know, we follow each other on Twitter, on Instagram, and she sees stuff I post about sometimes, you know, and she's like, oh, you should write about this. I mean, that's not the way she necessarily assigns me stories, but it could be a way of like, oh, you're thinking about this thing that people are talking about. Maybe you can just write about it, you know? And in this case, this was a case where I was sort of like thinking about it online, and she was like, oh, you should like develop this into a piece. But in general, like, if I have a spidey sense, yeah, I know what's interesting to me. I can't exactly define it, but it can be, yeah, like similarly to this stuff I grew up on. I mean, reality television is always a thing I write about, but it can
I love your love of P.T. Anderson too. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, there's like certain things that I'll always be interested in. You know, anything that has to do with Los Angeles, like I'm interested in. It's just
Los
like,
Angeles misses you so much. I mean, oh my God. I hope
soon. I mean, we're turning a corner, hopefully. Yeah.
You need to see Dorit's room at Buca di Beppo.
Oh my God. Really, yes. Let's go to Sherman Oaks.
It would. Yeah. It's calling for you. I don't know if you ever spent a lot of time in the Valley. Yeah. The Capri room. And then we could drive around Magnolia Boulevard in homage to PT. But
yes, I mean, I've been to the Valley, but I haven't, I have to say I haven't gone deep. So this would be an opportunity and we could do that.
Yeah, I would love that so much.
We could like record a podcast from the car.
Oh, see, now I'm just going to, can I just give you money to come now? Is this, sure. Your birthday is tomorrow. Your birthday is tomorrow. So
my
happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your pre-birthday Eve spending it with us.
Please, I have like zero plans.
Okay. Let's just keep on going. Let's do this. No, really, you have just been, you really, your talent just makes me so nervous. And please, you're one of the people that you're one of those people that like, you always asked John Mayer to follow you, and one day he did. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you posted a picture of John Mayer to the point where I was like, holy shit, is this photoshopped or something? And then you were actually hanging out with John Mayer. So you are my John Mayer. Thank you so much.
Oh my God.
For spending this time with me. And I don't want to like make you feel weird.
But no, not at all. This is wonderful.
I've loved you so much. So thank you.
No, thank you for having me. I'll be back if you want me. Maybe to sum up the second season of SLC.
Well, I need it before that. So let's.
Well, sure, that too. Maybe summing up the first couple of episodes.
Yes, of course. But thank you so much, and we will talk to you next time.
Yes. Okay. Bye, Ryan. Bye.
Yeah. Betches.